home and recovered classified documents. New Hampshire Governor Chris Sununu is praising local response to the COVID-19 pandemic following a scathing report on the effectiveness of the CDC.
We really had to buckle down and do what was best for our citizens and make our decisions. We kind of listened to what they said. Okay, I hear you, but this is what we're seeing on the ground, and we had to make decisions for our citizens.
Appearing on Fox News Sunday, the Republican said that while he was glad the agency was acknowledging its shortcomings, he questioned why there needed to be a taxpayer-funded review to tell the American people and government what they already knew. Sununu added he doesn't want people to not trust in the CDC, but he believes local control of public health is better at reacting to what's actually happening on the ground. First Lady Jill Biden is testing negative for COVID-19. According to her communications director, Dr. Biden received negative results from her second consecutive test on Sunday. She's been self-isolating for 5 days in South Carolina since testing positive for the virus last Monday. Three college students in Indiana are dead after a fiery single-car crash early Sunday. Indiana State University said all five people in the car were believed to be students, and the group included several football players. The school added that authorities are still investigating. Police say the car caught fire after leaving the roadway and striking a tree. Two passengers were freed with serious injuries and given medical attention. The driver and two others died at the scene. The daughter of a key advisor to Russian President Vladimir Putin is dead after a car bombing near Moscow. Russian investigators say Daria Dugina was killed when her Toyota Land Cruiser exploded in a small village southeast of the capital city last night. The 29-year-old TV commentator was the daughter of Russian nationalist Alexander Dugin. I'm Chris Caraggio, NBC News Radio.
Single-family houses and apartments are the key to passive income, a.k.a. retirement. No one knows this better than America's most successful investor educator, self-made multimillionaire, and CEO of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Wamsley. You've heard Del and his team on the radio. Now join the Lifestyles Unlimited team on location in Anaheim, August 13th and 14th for your Financial Freedom Seminar. Claim your seat now at GiveMeTotalFreedom.com. Over the course of 16 hours, we take you step-by-step, A to Z, on how to successfully invest in both single-family and multifamily properties. This is a complete class, not one of those teaser seminars. It's designed to teach you everything you need to know to purchase single-family and multifamily investment properties using our roadmap on your own from day one. Our team of expert educators and mentors want to meet you for 2 days of life-changing education. Get your lifestyle now. Go to GiveMeTotalFreedom.com. Limited seating, unlimited potential. Sign up now at GiveMeTotalFreedom.com.
For several years, KCAA has been marketing the Youngevity brand of nutritional and personal care products. Our experience with Youngevity has been 100% positive, so we are pleased to recommend them to you. Regarding nutritional supplements, we recommend Pollen Burst in the berry flavor and Tangy Tangerine 2.0 in the tablet form. For regularity issues, we recommend 3-Day Cleanse, and for personal care, we recommend Morning Hydration Cream. You can shop online for Youngevity at www.kcaateam.com, or you can order by phone by calling 800-982-3197 and tell customer support that you are part of the KCAA team. Youngevity is an American company based in San Diego. Call Youngevity at 800-982-3197 and ask about monthly auto ship that allows you to buy Youngevity products at wholesale prices. That number again, 800-982-3197.
What does the WeatherBug app tell you?
My commute will be a doozy today.
Pack my allergy meds.
Lightning. Pick up a pizza, not a tennis racket.
With more free map layers than any other weather app, WeatherBug tells you more of what you need to know to prepare you for the unpredictable. Discover why over 10 million users choose WeatherBug.
Maybe it's a commute to the couch day.
Download the WeatherBug app today for free.
Single-family houses and apartments are the key to passive income, a.k.a. retirement. No one knows this better than America's most successful investor, educator, self-made multimillionaire, and CEO of Lifestyles Unlimited, Del Wamsley. Meet Del's team live in Anaheim, 2 days only, Saturday and Sunday, August 13th and 14th. To attend, register now at GiveMeTotalFreedom.com. That's GiveMeTotalFreedom.com. Limited seating, unlimited potential. Register today at GiveMeTotalFreedom.com.
We've all heard jokes that begin with a rabbi, a priest, and a minister walk into a bar. Well, a rabbi, a minister, and a deacon actually walk into the KCAA studios every Sunday morning at 7 a.m. to host the radio program Religion on the Line. And that's no joke. Together, they offer a mixture of humor and serious conversation about things that really matter in life and how to make our lives happier and more fulfilling. They compare religious doctrine and learn from each other while bringing a unique perspective of religion to the KCAA audience. Listen every Sunday morning from 7 to 8 a.m. for Religion on the Line, the intersection of humanity and divinity, right here on KCAA Radio, the station that leaves no listeners behind.
The following program is produced by the AM First Radio Network and distributed by Global American Broadcasting, the Gab Radio Network.
Thank you for tuning in for this edition of Justice Watch with Attorney Zulu Ali. I am Attorney Zulu Ali with the Justice Watch crew, Rosa Nunez, Michael Bilal Clark, Dr. Akil Bashir, and Andrea Rodeman. This week, like every week, we'll be discussing critical legal and social justice issues that are impacting our communities. This week, the topic is going to be, are the police unfairly hated? And joining us actually in this discussion is going to be retired Detective Larry Reese, who has a law enforcement career spanning more than 30 years. His most recent assignment was a detective at Vanderbilt Police Department, and he's worked at various police departments in the past. So thank you for joining us, Detective Reese.
It's good to be with you, Counselor, and thanks for bringing this topic to the public's forefront.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think this is something that we very rarely talk about. I mean, we clearly address the issue about the problems with, obviously, with the police department, but very seldom do we actually really address issues as far as from, I guess from a police perspective. Now, you know, I think that there's been a long, you know, there's so much out there, and it's been this long, ongoing disdain and, you know, I guess I hate using the word hatred, but to a degree, I mean, it ends up being hatred against police departments. Based upon what has, you know, been the obvious. I mean, we clearly have seen it from the very beginning where the police have actually been used early on to enforce slave laws. Police were used to enforce black codes. The police have been used to enforce segregation laws. And we saw what happened during the civil rights period where you have COINTELPRO, where, you know, we know that J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI was involved in the operations to discredit and using, you know, some really unfair and you know, really bad tactics to go after, you know, leaders within our own community. We saw what happened during the, you know, the war on drugs, where we saw unprecedented numbers of African Americans that were arrested and incarcerated because of the drug laws that tended to focus primarily on the black community. And then we had this time. I mean, we remember I called it the OJ period and the aftermath of what we saw
Robbie
going
King.
On. And the aftermath of what was going on with, you know, the Rodney King. I mean, it was put in front and center during the Rodney King riots, a Rodney King situation, a Rodney King beating that we saw all the way up until, you know, Michael Brown, and we saw all the way to, you know, George Floyd and beyond, and the police not being, you know, held accountable, at least from many people's perspectives. And so it's just this long ongoing distrust that, you know, primarily the black community and minority community. And, you know, to be quite honest with you, it goes beyond that. You know, there's a lot of white people and poor people that don't trust or dislike the police. And, you know, the question is, you know, is this been a fair assessment of the police department? You know, we have so many shows today with some brilliant journalists and some brilliant broadcasters that focus almost primarily on showing you the negativity of the police.
Yeah.
And so I guess my question is, I mean, for obviously yourself, you know, having a long career as a law enforcement officer, is it fair?
You know, Counselor, I would have to say that to some degree that it is, in order to have us under the microscope. And one of the things I discussed with trainees when I would train, I said, you're getting ready to be in a business that you're on stage all the time, and you're actually enlightened whenever you flip those blue lights on, because no matter what's taking place, a person could be doing something totally opposite on the other side of the street or the other side of the parking lot or the other side of the building. But when those lights come on, you're on stage. And so you're going to be seen more and you're going to be scrutinized more, and we just have to accept that. That's part of taking the badge. But when you stop to think about that, on average, they say that 240 million 911 calls occur each day in America. Mm. And even in LAPD, they answer up to around, I think, somewhere around 1,400 emergency calls each day. And so you see the number of interactions that people have with police officers, that statistically, when you look at it, that it's not as devastating as one would think. When you consider that many calls where a police officer is having a personal contact or addressing someone's need and trying to help them, or either, you know, suppress a crime or take a murderer into custody, there's a high probability of a lot of things going wrong that, we're fortunate in the business that it doesn't. But also, you laid out something that fundamentally, when you have that mindset of history, of years of oppression, and where we were at the spearhead of oppression, we were at the spearhead of when civil rights movement, people involved in the civil rights movement, the last person their family saw them with was someone with a badge, and they later ended up in an earthen grave or in a lake or something. It calls you to start to lose trust. And then when you see things that take place where that you find that officers have lied, or they have done things where they have just not done the appropriate measures and to make sure that they were going to the right resident to serve a search warrant, and then someone loses their life, it's just a lot of little things like that that we have to take that onus for. But when you look at it statistically, you kind of wonder that when you have roughly 251,000 people a year that die of medical malpractice, and they say that sometimes it might be as many as 440,000 that pass on medical malpractice, depending on what you're looking at, you have to start to ask yourself, what is it that society really, you know, is doing in regards to what they're concerned with? Yes, we should be concerned with what police are doing. Yes, we should be concerned with the ability for us to do our jobs and to be professional and treat everyone as we'd like to be treated ourselves. You know, one of the questions that I had interjected in our review process at the Vanderbilt Police Department and used it at other departments I've worked at is that we asked the question, what does it mean to police unto others as you would have them police unto you? And I think that's important. And until we get back in our training sessions, the understanding in their heart that people just didn't wake up one day and go, oh, I hate the police. You know, black people just didn't wake up one day and say, oh, I hate the police. Mm. It's a historical, it's a generational, it's an oppression that has taken place. Yeah. And that any time we see an officer that's doing something unethical, we need to have policies and procedures in our department where the onus is not on that officer to do that and be ostracized and possibly hurt in the line of duty because someone won't back him up. It's in policy that you have to bring it to the forefront, and it has to be addressed, or you will be terminated and dealt with.
Mm. Right. You know, what's interesting is, you know, I noticed something interesting during the situation that happened, you know, with George Floyd, to the extent that it matters for the purposes of our conversation. What you saw, really, when you were looking at all the protests, right?
Mm-hmm.
is that really there was just as many people were protesting about their problems with police in their own countries.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that we very seldom talked about during that time period is, as much as people were protesting, or at least it seemed that the world was protesting about what they saw, on camera, you know, for everyone to see, you start seeing that individuals were protesting within their own. I mean, even there were black people in Israel. I don't know if you saw that. They were protesting about the way that they were being treated in Israel. In the African countries, people were protesting about the way they were treated by the police. Then in European countries, it seems to be, to the extent that it matters, that, you know, police corruption is nothing new, and it is a widespread problem, right? However, living in this country, we would almost think that it's something that is really unique to just America. But I think that what it brings forth, which is something that we always have understood, is that man has always had this, and woman have always had this issue with corrupting power. Right.
Yes, sir.
I mean, it's almost like there's always this, and I think that it's just, you know, some of it is human, a lot of it is human. I'm not letting anything off the hook from the perspective that race does play a significant part in what we've seen with the police brutality and abuse and corruption, but a lot of it stems from humans. Through history, have always messed up power, and you know, and some of it stems from that, and I think sometimes it goes unrecognized. But at any rate, before I go back to you to take the Reese, we were getting ready to go take a break real quick, and I'd ask you to respond to that on the other side of the break. Please do not touch that dial.
Do you have a great idea for a radio show but have no idea where to start? Or have you been hosting a podcast for a while and want to take it to the next level? If so, you need the Gab Radio Network. To host a show on the Gab Radio Network, all you need is your voice, and we'll handle the rest. From technical engineering to full-service audio production and much more. Every show on the Gab Radio Network can be heard on our station on the TuneIn Radio app. Plus, we put all of our shows on our satellite, which is accessed by over 5,500 stations. And here's the best part. You can host from anywhere you want. There are many means to connect to the Gab Radio Network remotely, and our staff of highly trained engineers and producers will make you sound like you're right here in studio. So, if you want to be on the Gab Radio Network, the same network that hosts the Small Business Advocate, Radio MD, and The Federalist, send an email right now to sales.
Nubian Pictures presents a CCM Films production documentary entitled Purpose and Freedom. Keep Your Hand on the Plow. This emotional and strong documentary tells the story of African-American lawyer Zulu Ali seeking justice and his purpose as a lawyer while crossing paths with Araceli, an undocumented immigrant from Mexico who is seeking her freedom. Together, they help discover their purpose and freedom in each other. Watch this incredible film today from iTunes Movies, YouTube Movies, Amazon Prime, and Google Play Movies. Learn about the cast and crew, links to purchase, and more at purposeandfreedommovie.com. Purpose and Freedom. Keep your hand on the plow. Available now. Rated G.
I did not feel safe. That's why I decided to come to California, because I didn't feel safe in Mexico.
It's kind of like the system, and if you go outside the system, then it becomes a struggle.
Nubian Pictures presents defense representation and are looking to protect your rights, or maybe someone who is experiencing an injustice or discrimination and need a lawyer you can trust? Well, that's exactly why you need the help of award-winning trial lawyer Zulu Ali. The law offices of Zulu Ali provides immigration defense representation for those seeking justice and looking to protect their rights. If you or a loved one needs professional legal advice and representation, then contact Zulu Ali. Zulu Ali's firm focuses on criminal law, family law, civil and personal injury, and international law. Zulu Ali is a former police officer and U.S. Marine, so you know you're in good hands. Serving all of California and immigration cases nationwide, representing victims and suspects at the International Criminal Court at The Hague. Call Zulu Ali today at 888-682-3049 or visit ZuluAliLaw.com.
Welcome back to Justice Watch with Attorney Zulu Ali and the Justice Watch crew and our very special guest, Detective Larry Reese, where we're continuing with our discussion on why do we hate the police, or is that the real question? I said, why do we hate police?
Is it justified?
Why are they unfair? Are the police unfairly hated?
Yeah.
So anyway, so I kind of like, because I know there's a lot of questions that I think that everybody has, but I think that kind of like, you know, just from your perspective, I mean, how do you think that plays into the overall concept, I guess, or attitude that we have, just as humans, I guess, towards police brutality?
Well, Counselor, again, I want to thank you and the panel for bringing up this subject because, man, it's something that we really need to have this dialogue about. You know, when we start talking about defunding police departments and doing things like that, that we have to realize that first and foremost, in order to resolve a lot of these things, it's about relationships. Mm-hmm. It's about my ability to know the people in my community in which I'm policing. Just quickly, a point that we had probably 4 years ago, a situation where a young man was walking through a park and it had a lot of kids around, and he was carrying a weapon, and he was called, and the Metro Police Department responded. Now, initially, we had had earlier in the year, a shooting that involved a gentleman that had been stopped, dropped a weapon, picked up the weapon, and he was shot and killed by the police. And this gentleman was walking with the weapon and very easily could have been shot. But the strange dynamic, Zoo, is that the officer that responded weeks before had been at a function where he had personal contact with this gentleman, where they had just a barbecue and an eat out where the community could meet the police could meet them. And he was able to look up and realize he knew this gentleman. He called him by name. When the gentleman turned around, he recognized the officer. He put down the gun, and it was a situation where that he was wanting to just probably hurt himself. And so a lot of times we fail to understand that a lot of times these issues that we see that go on with police on civilian shootings, we're dealing with suicide by cop. Mm-hmm. And until we sit down and start to have a nice dialogue and educating not only our officers and realizing what they're dealing with and to know that there's ability to stand down from that, and we have these mental issues that we're dealing with, and also for the public to know that when they review these things, that this may be what we're dealing with. But going back to what the initial question was, I think it's so strange and it's sad when we look at the history of policing throughout the United States. One of the common denominators is income. Income. That level of income that the people that are being contacted by the police makes a difference a lot of times in how they're actually addressed and handled. And it shouldn't be that way. Mm-hmm. And we have got to do a better job in law enforcement in educating our young men and women in the academy to let them know that because on this side of the tracks, policing is no different than what it should be in the Bell Mead sector of the city. It should be all in the same, that you base it primarily on what you see and what you're dealing with when you get there. Don't make a conclusion because you go into a neighborhood and you see broken windows and you see these things that these people do not deserve the same respect and consideration.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had a question. I'm not sure if you've seen the incident that transpired a couple of days ago with the young lady in the back of the police car who actually loaded an AR-15, got out of the handcuff, loaded the AR-15, shot one of the officers as well as one of the civilians. No gunfire was actually returned. She basically got out the cruiser 4 hours later, lived to tell her story. Now, my thing is, had that been an African-American woman or a man, that car probably would have been riddled with bullet holes, and they probably wouldn't have walked out alive. And I think that of course, just increased the hatred amongst African Americans, saying that, you know, had this been an issue, then it would have turned out something totally different. So the first question is, do you believe that that increased amount of hatred amongst African American when they see things like this happen? And then also the other question I have, do you think that there's an attack on African Americans in the police force?
You know, to answer your first one, I would have to say that there is a situation that occurs whenever we in the African-American community see that, and we say that why is that consideration given on one side, and yet a few weeks ago we had a young man that was shot, I think, as many as 60 times.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to ask yourself, wait a minute, he wasn't even armed, even though he had a weapon in the vehicle, but you could clearly see that what was taking place was another situation or a possible situation of suicide by cop. But like you said, what does color play into that? I mean, I'm with you. When I saw the video, I was amazed that there were not bullets going down range when you had two people that were shot and this person sitting in a car. Normally that car would probably have been riddled with bullets. Mm-hmm. And so, but again, I think it's that subliminal mindset that takes place where you also have race involved and you have probably economic status of the person that you may be dealing with. And I think it just changes the response that a lot of officers give to certain situations. It's almost one of those things that we talk about in training that using the computerized system, the FAST system, where you're watching things on a screen and you respond, it's amazing how you see that level of anxiety rise in officers when they're dealing with people of color. Mm-hmm. And Attorney Ali and I have talked about this, is that when you come into law enforcement, you go through this bombardment of mental questions and issues and things to try to see if you are able to do the job. But what they need to do across the nation is at least 10 years into service, you should be reevaluated. Mm-hmm. And that's something I think we're losing sight of, because that changes you from the time you come out of the rookie academy until 10 years in the street, and what you've been in conflict and confrontation with changes your insight and how you deal with things. And we need to be able to manage that. I think across the nation, we see that a number of departments, New York City and Milwaukee and a number, have declared a mental state of emergency because of the number of suicides within the police department.
Mm.
So when you look at that, you say, how can you have a police department willing to take care of a community when the officers themselves are in a position where they're ready to take their own life?
Wow.
So we have some work to do.
Mm. Detective Reese, I have a question. So before an officer is given the position of that type of authority, what is in place to evaluate the mental health of that officer? Like, you know, what kind of testing, if any, are done for, you know, these officers before you're in that position? Is there any? Is there like an extreme psychological testing to see, you know, where you're at mentally, if you can even handle something like that? That's one question. And number two, I was told a long time ago by a friend of mine that even as a African-American officer, he would find himself unconsciously having bias towards his own just based on what he went through in training. And it was almost like they were indoctrinated to believe that if you look this way, and like you're saying about economic status, and if, you know, if you go to this area, expect it to be that. Expect that this is what you're going to see. Everything is basically cookie cutter. However, like the young lady who was able to get to that AR-15, the cuffs clearly possibly weren't even tight enough for her to be restrained. I don't think that they even considered her to be an actual threat to that degree.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, what my question is, like, what is in place to check the mental health of the officers, and do you feel that some of what my friend was telling me in regards to that getting put in their mind, do you feel any truth in that?
Well, I think it's one of those things. I tell the class, I call it the brown chihuahua theory, and that is if I'm a postman and I go down the street and every time I get to a house and there's a brown chihuahua, I get bit. And so after a period of time, I'll become very apprehensive if I get to a house and I see that. One of the things that we have to try to train our officers to understand is that every situation is unique.
Right.
And even if you have a call situation where you answer 5 robberies in progress during the week, and each one might relate to an African-American or somebody of another race, you cannot just draw the conclusion that each time you're dealing with this situation involving a minority, that's what you're dealing with. And it takes a while for an officer to be able to have that seasoned mindset. And it also takes good training officers to also instill to them early on that that's not the situation, that everything has to be addressed on its own merit. Now, coming into the department, we take that, I think it used to be called the Minnesota Multiple Personality Exam, and then a lot of follow-ups with two other psychiatrists to be able to determine, you know, our stability to do the job. But I think our problem is a lot of times you have people that come in, they've never been confronted with a life or death situation.
Yeah.
I've never seen people, you know, torn to pieces in a car accident or anything like that. So their mindset is one way, but 10 years into the business, you've seen all these tragedies, and it changes you, you know. And it's one of those things we have to get serious and say, hey, wait a minute. We cannot be afraid to reevaluate our policemen and women to see if they are efficient enough to do the job. I will tell you, I'm just speculating, that I think the reason a lot of departments don't do it is because a number of officers would probably not make it, thus reducing the numbers in the ranks, thus reducing the ability to actually do the job that we need to do. Mm-hmm. Of course, with defunding and a lot of police officers that have walked away, I was sharing with Attorney Ali the other day a story about a young man that I knew that worked for the Las Vegas Police Department. And he'd been out there, and he'd been almost 10 or 11 years on the job, doing well, promoted up through the ranks, training at the academy. Went into a restaurant. The guy came in and said, I'm paying for the fireman's food, but all the police officers on this side of the room, you can go F yourself.
Oh, wow.
He later left the department. He's now a fireman. And he said, I'm a public service at heart.
Wow. Anyway, yeah, we're going to come back to it. Please do not touch that dial. We'll be back with Justice Watch on the other side of the break.
There's a new nationally syndicated radio program that's sweeping the nation, and you don't want to miss it. Justice Watch with Attorney Zulu Ali, the voice of justice for the people. The focus of Justice Watch is to provide an honest analysis and viable solutions to the criminal and social justice crisis in America and the world from a black, brown, working class, and socially disadvantaged perspective, and to motivate listeners to be informed and part of the solution. Zulu Ali is joined by the Justice Crew, consisting of Rosa Nunez, Michael Clark, Dr. Akil Bashir, and Charito Ali to tackle the most pressing issues. Host Attorney Zulu Ali is a former police officer, U.S. Marine Corps veteran, and an award-winning trial lawyer who focuses on representing persons accused of crimes, immigrants, victims of discrimination, and persons seeking civil justice. Find out how to listen to Justice Watch with Attorney Zulu Ali at justicewatchradio.com. Nubian Pictures presents a CCM Films production documentary entitled Purpose and Freedom. Keep Your Hand on the Plow. This emotional and strong documentary tells the story of African-American lawyer Zulu Ali seeking justice and his purpose as a lawyer while crossing paths with Araceli, an undocumented immigrant from Mexico who is seeking her freedom. Together, they help discover their purpose and freedom in each other. Watch this incredible film today from iTunes Movies, YouTube Movies, Amazon Prime, and Google Play Movies. Learn about the cast and crew, links to purchase, and more at purposeandfreedommovie.com. Purpose and Freedom. Keep your hand on the plow. Available now. Rated G.
I did not feel safe. That's why I decided to come to California, because I didn't feel safe in Mexico.
It's kind of like the system, and if you go outside the system, then it becomes a struggle.
Are you an immigrant seeking defense representation and are looking to protect your rights? Or maybe someone who is experiencing an injustice or discrimination and need a lawyer you can trust? Well, that's exactly why you need the help of award-winning trial lawyer Zulu Ali. The law offices of Zulu Ali provides immigration defense representation for those seeking justice and looking to protect their rights. If you or a loved one needs professional legal advice and representation, then contact Zulu Ali. Zulu Ali's firm focuses on criminal law, family law, civil and personal injury, and international law. Zulu Ali is a former police officer and U.S. Marine, so you know you're in good hands. Serving all of California and immigration cases nationwide, representing victims and suspects at the International Criminal Court at The Hague. Call Zulu Ali today at 888-682-3049 or visit ZuluAliLaw.com.
Welcome back to Justice Watch with Attorney Zulu Ali and the Justice Watch crew and our very special guest, Detective Larry Reese, as we continue with our discussion on are the police unfairly hated? That's a lot. Sometimes it's hard to grab your head around it. But, yeah, I mean, it's interesting when you came back out, before we went to the break, you were talking about the police officer and how, you know, he's in a situation where he goes into a restaurant and basically is, you know, ridiculed about being a police officer and, you know, ultimately forcing, you know, oftentimes good police officers do resign and quit. You know, and I think a lot of people who would otherwise be attracted to the profession probably are not attracted to the profession just simply because of the public's opinion or a growing public opinion about the police department and the way in which it's ran as a. But you know, one of the things that I wanted to get to, and I guess it's a question, but it's also a comment from my own observation. I think that what, you know, the police are the face of the entire criminal justice system. I mean, I think that, you know, whatever problems that you may have with the police department or with oftentimes is more of a reflection of the entire criminal justice system. And I think that oftentimes there are players within the criminal justice system that get a pass or actually, you know, get, you know, left, you know, let off the hook. What's interesting is about the police department, I think, in comparison, I think as an organization, I mean, it is a paramilitary organization, and oftentimes the relationships between police officers and a relationship between the public are two different things. I mean, I think that police officers have, in many cases, two faces. Yeah. And what I mean by that is that, as we talked about earlier, where you have, you know, good African-American police officers as well as good white or people who are from different communities, whether they're Mexican-American or whatever they are, Asian-American. I mean, you know, oftentimes the way, you know, they see let's say players within a department who are doing the things that they shouldn't do on the street, oftentimes that goes unchecked, and oftentimes the way they may treat a black suspect is different than the way that they would treat another black police officer. And it makes it very difficult in that type of organization to clean up your own ranks, because oftentimes when you're going through the process, there are things that you may not be seen by other officers with regards to what happens on the street. I mean, that clearly that's not all cases, but I believe that it happens in some cases. But going back to the bigger issue of the criminal justice system in general, is that oftentimes we have a negative opinion about what's happening on the street based upon maybe the contact that people have within the court system. And one of the things that we talk about often on this show is the jury system, and, you know, how police officers oftentimes aren't held accountable. And sometimes the lack of accountability is a result of police officers, number one, being charged, you know, by the district attorney, and number two, not being convicted by juries, just simply because the juries that are often used in police shootings or police misconduct cases are juries that are not typically African-American or even from the communities where the police officers serve. And I think that, you know, that is like, to me, I think that's the huge issue. I think that we could make more progress, and I think we could see it's not going to solve the entire problem. But I do believe that the jury system is a huge issue in the way in which police officers operate and are being held accountable. And I kind of want to maybe get a little bit of your input as it relates to the overall, you know, criminal justice system and how we should pay a little bit more attention to the entire system itself as it relates to maybe policing up bad police officers.
Well, Counselor, you and your panel are wise beyond your years, because I will tell you that I feel that deeply in my heart. Sometimes when I'm giving my talk, I have a talk called Driving While American, and it's in hopes of being able to have the African-American community or all communities be able to understand how to relate with officers when they're in a traffic stop and the dynamics that take place in that. But one of the things I share with them, I say, please, show me a show of hands of those that are registered voters. And sadly enough, normally it's only about 15 to 25% of the people in attendance that will raise their hand. And I will share it with them. I say, you got to understand the importance of you going to that ballot box, not only for making a decision there as it relates to what's happening in your community and also in your state and also nationally, but that's where they get the jury from. Mm-hmm. You're selected from those that vote. And if you don't vote, you'll never be picked to be on a panel to be on a jury. And if you're not on a jury, you're not in a position to maybe make something right that was done wrong. And so I would solicit everyone, you know, if you have that mindset that it's not important, you got to understand what Attorney Ali is talking about is the foundation of how we start to change this thing. Because you and I both have witnessed in our years in law enforcement that there are times that people will go before the court system and you know they really need a break. They're not a bad person. They just have a situation that's occurred that's caused a domino effect of things that they can't get out of. And the court system has an opportunity to bolster them and stop that pattern of destruction, but they don't do it. We add to it. Right. And that has got to stop. But the only way that can stop is if you're sitting in that jury box and saying, we're not going down that road. We're not giving this person 20 years for something that they might only deserve 6 months. And then an ability to be on probation and make sure they get a job and take care of their family and their children don't fall into also this process. Right. And so, non-counselor, you hit the nail on the head. That's vitally important part of the equation.
Right. And, I mean, I think that it also gets, you know, as far as these communities and you know, the police, even sometimes when people are charged, you know, with certain crimes, and let's just say it's done wrongfully or there are issues with the police, when you're able to go in front of a jury that is reflective of the person accused of the crime, oftentimes as African Americans, I think that it does make a difference with the way that the jury sees the narrative. I mean, there's different people have different realities based upon, you know, their experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, you know, and that's why it's so important to have a jury that's, you know, that looks like the defendant so that they can kind of understand, you know, the issues and kind of question the police. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So in other words, that's, you know, the whole idea. One of the most important concepts of American system of justice is the presumption of innocence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the presumption of innocence requires a juror to assume that the police have arrested the wrong person, that the prosecutor is prosecuting the wrong person. And if you and you know, that's because the presumption of innocence and the belief that the police do not arrest the wrong person pretty much don't fit within the same box. That's mm-hmm. why it's important to have those individuals and play our role, an active role in trying to change, you know, the system as much as we possibly can. More of an active role. That's really a way to the more involved we are in the criminal justice system, the more we're going to start actually seeing, you know, more changes. For example, if I was to go, I was listening where this lady said that she was she lived in a predominantly African-American in one of the boroughs of New York.
Mm-hmm.
And she says that when she goes to the city council meeting or any meeting that's where the city is involved or making decisions about the local residents' life, she's almost always the only black person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Tragic,
in,
sir.
In
tragic.
A
tragic.
City or in a borough or in an area where it's predominantly black. Mm. And so, you know, we have to begin to start becoming more active in changing our own situations.
Mm-hmm.
and going to those meetings and getting involved and figuring out a way, because there's no, if you're going to sit back and you're going to complain about what they're doing, but it only happens in a room full of people who are frustrated or in a situation that's you're sitting on your couch, then you can't expect someone to do something for you, right? We, you know, it's almost like someone telling you, we discussed about the fact that we do know the police disproportionately kill black folks, police disproportionately arrest black folks. We know those things exist. But as my grandfather said, and I say this all the time, fish swim and ducks quiet.
Right.
But then what do you do about it? And I think that sometimes we miss out on those discussions. And then if you do have a police officer who is inside a department and he wants some help, how do we help them? You know what I mean? Because he can't do it by himself.
That's right.
But at any rate, we'll continue with Justice Watch on the other side of the break. Please do not touch that down.
There's a new nationally syndicated radio program that's sweeping the nation, and you don't want to miss it. Justice Watch with Attorney Zulu Ali, the voice of justice for the people. The focus of Justice Watch is to provide an honest analysis and viable solutions to the criminal and social justice crisis in America and the world from a black, brown, working class, and socially disadvantaged perspective, and to motivate listeners to be informed and part of the solution. Zulu Ali is joined by the Justice Crew, consisting of Rosa Nunez, Michael Clark, Dr. Akil Bashir, and Charito Ali, to tackle the most pressing issues. Host Attorney Zulu Ali is a former police officer, U.S. Marine Corps veteran, and an award-winning trial lawyer who focuses on representing persons accused of crimes, immigrants, victims of discrimination, and persons seeking civil justice. Find out how to listen to Justice Watch with Attorney Zulu Ali at justicewatchradio.com. Nubian Pictures presents a CCM Films production documentary entitled Purpose and Freedom. Keep Your Hand on the Plow. This emotional and strong documentary tells the story of African-American lawyer Zulu Ali seeking justice and his purpose as a lawyer while crossing paths with Araceli, an undocumented immigrant from Mexico who is seeking her freedom. Together, they help discover their purpose and freedom in each other. Watch this incredible film today from iTunes Movies, YouTube Movies, Amazon Prime, and Google Play Movies. Learn about the cast and crew, links to purchase, and more at purposeandfreedommovie.com. Purpose and Freedom. Keep your hand on the plow. Available now. Rated G.
I did not feel safe. That's why I decided to come to California, because I didn't feel safe in Mexico.
It's kind of like the system, and if you go outside the system, then it becomes a struggle.
Are you an immigrant seeking defense representation and are looking to protect your rights? Or maybe someone who is experiencing an injustice or discrimination and need a lawyer you can trust? Well, that's exactly why you need the help of award-winning trial lawyer Zulu Ali. The law offices of Zulu Ali provides immigration defense representation for those seeking justice and looking to protect their rights. If you or a loved one needs professional legal advice and representation, then contact Zulu Ali. Zulu Ali's firm focuses on criminal law, family law, civil and personal injury, and international law. Zulu Ali is a former police officer and U.S. Marine, so you know you're in good hands. Serving all of California and immigration cases nationwide, representing victims and suspects at the International Criminal Court at The Hague. Call Zulu Ali today at 888-682-3049 or visit ZuluAliLaw.com.
Welcome back to Justice Watch with Attorney Zulu Ali and the Justice Watch crew and our very special guest, Detective Larry Reese, where we're continuing on our discussion about whether the police are unfairly treated or unfairly hated. And I kind of want to just hit something real quick, and I'm going to let you kind of chime in, Detective Reese, because I know that, you know, the other Justice Watch crew has some questions for you. But, you know, going back to the issue about, you know, the fact that they – let's just assume you are an officer within a department that's interested – in trying to make a difference. Not only, obviously, you have a couple of responsibilities. One is primarily the responsibility of protecting and serving the citizens of your community. But if you're clearly aware of the fact that there are these types of injustices that are going on within the department, what are the things that you feel that the community can do to help officers who are right-minded officers who would like to see or understand the fact that there are some injustices and changes need to be made?
Well, that's a good question, Counselor. Thank you so much. One of the things that I would like to see get off the ground, it's just a personal thought to me. You know, we talk about in law enforcement, it's the band of blue or it's the thin blue line, and it's these things that reference to blue. But one of the programs that I would like to see initiated, because it's all about relationships, it's about me knowing you and you knowing me and we knowing each other. And I would like to see departments around the nation just consider having a program and whereby that we are allow these wristbands, so to speak. And with these wristbands, when young kids come to our precinct and they get a presentation and we talk about what we do and they get to know us, an officer will adopt basically a number of those children that are in that community. And with that, they get a wristband. And on that wristband, there's a number. And so if an officer has a situation where he's in contact with someone and something's going on and he sees that band, he knows, well, wait a minute, that child or that adult or whoever, we can do it across the board, is associated with somebody in this department, meaning that there's somebody that has adopted them, they know about them, they assist them, they help the family, they help the extended family. You go up, you look at the code, you call it in, the dispatcher looks at it and goes, oh, here's the contact officer. Then you have this relationship. We need to start to establish this relationship, Zoo, because that's where it's lost. Because we feel like at times we're dealing with people that we don't know, that we're questionable, and unless you have these bias or prejudice in your heart where you just are hating people of another color, race, or whatever it may be, or even gender, normally it's just about the relationship. So to me, just small programs like that, if we would just consider things like that, that are, I don't think they're that unique, but it's just about touching base with the heart of the people that we're sworn to protect in the first place. And I'm just praying that one day we can just, you know, kind of get off this high horse we have, and it's us against them, and, you know, we're paramilitary, and we have to be, no, we do have to be hard. You and I both know when you go through a door and somebody's firing rounds downrange, you better be hard. You better have that mindset to be able to deal with that. I've dealt with it. You've dealt with it. It just comes with a job. But at the same time, it also comes with the need for compassion. And that compassion comes with the need to get to know the people we serve. And so anything that we can do constructively, either like the band program or just whatever it may be, that we connect with the community and we get to know each other. And even if I'm not the officer on duty, if someone else encounters you, they know how to reach out and know that you are connected to me. And then we become what? We become a family.
Go ahead. I was going to ask, well, I was going to say that that sounds like an amazing plan. That sounds like an amazing plan, almost too good to to manifest itself. Yeah. My question is, based on your experience, do you realistically see something like that happening? You know, have your comrades share that same desire to even want that to happen?
Well, strangely enough, most officers that come to work, and if you've ever had an officer that you've seen lose his life in the line of duty or shot, the thing that goes through our mind, and Attorney Ali can allude to this, that, you know, you go through briefing and you come out of briefing, and one of the things they tell everybody is be safe out there. You know, you got to go home at the end of the day. Any program that we have that will minimize the possibility of us being confronted with deadly force is something that I'm telling you would be a buy-in. But what we have to do is get them to understand that it's a buy-in not only because we want to go home, but it's a buy-in because the people we serve, we want them to go home. Because one of the things that I used to share, and I had a colonel tell me when I graduated from the police academy, he said, the thing you're getting ready to do when you raise your right hand and take this oath is that you're willing to say that I'm going to give 30, 40, 60, whatever minutes, seconds that it takes for me to make that determination that I do need to use deadly force before I use deadly force. I'm willing to give that time, even if it means I might lose my life. And he says, if you're not willing to do that, take your badge off, put it in this seat, and get the hell out of my auditorium. And I never will forget that, because that's true. Nobody makes us take this job. And so with that in mind, we shouldn't be in a position that even if I want to go home, I'm going to take your life just because I want to go home. No, you didn't make me take this job. I wasn't drafted into being a police officer. I took this on my own. So I also took on that responsibility that I'm willing to die and giving you those extra seconds. So I think if we go about it selling it the right way to the department and let them know at the end of the day, we're trying to protect you and we're also trying to protect the public.
And I think, and I was going to ask you a question in regards to that. I think, and you said it just now, in regards to what you're taught, as far as everybody want to go home at the end of the day. And mm-hmm. then also you're taught that I would rather go ahead and discharge this gun and be judged by 12 than carry by 6, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And I think the old saying, you're right,
yeah,
partner.
And I think the mm-hmm. sentiment on the streets amongst people that see so much brutality now is the same way now. Yeah. They in order not to go to prison to get this life sentence, or I would rather have that same type of philosophy. I would rather be judged by 12 than carry by 6 as well. And so that's only because of all of the brutality that they have seen. One of the things that my question is this: when we're dealing with different cases, such as someone having a knife or someone that poses a threat to you that you don't see a physical weapon, I mean, there's always a way of taking someone down other than just by deadly force. But I think in the police, they teach you so much to use that deadly force. That's why we see so many killings. I mean, I can remember when I was in prison and the guards would see someone with a knife. They would hit them with a beanbag gun. That beanbag gun was so powerful that it would knock their knife out of their hand. It would take the breath out of them. So what I'm saying is, why not use tasers in these types of situations, beanbag guns, and other non-lethal methods in order to subdue a criminal?
Well, you know, I'm going to give you a valid point of something you brought up earlier, and you bring up a valid point also, that it broke my heart when they started talking about defunding the police. And when I watched that video of that lady getting that AK and shooting out of that automobile, I realized then there are so many police departments that are so underfunded that all they can barely do is give cuffs, ammo, and a weapon. You know, tasers are not part of it. Beanbags are not part of the funding. All these secondary, less than lethal options are not available for most police departments across the state. You know, Zoo's worked for a rural sheriff's department before. Sometimes it's funny that they barely can keep gas in the car. And so I think that as a community and as the public, we'll have this outcry to say, look, let's fund these things, but let's not fund these things where we got these big armored vehicles and all this other stuff. Let's utilize these less than lethal possibilities like what you mentioned. But the problem is that most departments just don't have the funding for that. And it's sad, but they should.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. That's a lot, man. I mean, yeah. I have a million more questions. And the problem is that we're basically, you know, coming up against the end of the show, unfortunately. And it's definitely a topic that I hope that we can, you know, kind of have a second phase to where we can talk a little bit more about. Because I think there's some solutions out there, and I think we should figure out, spend as much time talking about how we can solve the problem as we do trying to identify the problem.
And put those possibilities into motion.
Right.
Absolutely.
Man, you know, you always bring the heat, bring the smoke when we have a discussion. So I appreciate you again for calling in, and hopefully we can get you on in the near future. So we'll see you next time.
Thank you all. Thank you all for having the discussion, Counselor, because we need it.
All right, thank you. We'll see you next week, same time, same place, same channel. Until that time, stay blessed.
There's a new nationally syndicated radio program that's sweeping the nation, and you don't want to miss it. Justice Watch with Attorney Zulu Ali, the voice of justice for the people. The focus of Justice Watch is to provide an honest analysis and viable solutions to the criminal and social justice crisis in America and the world from a black, brown, working class, and socially disadvantaged perspective, and to motivate listeners to be informed and part of the solution. Zulu Ali is joined by the Justice Crew, consisting of Rosa Nunez, Michael Clark, Dr. Akil Bashir, and Charito Ali, to tackle the most pressing issues. Host Attorney Zulu Ali is a former police officer, U.S. Marine Corps veteran, and an award-winning trial lawyer who focuses on representing persons accused of crimes, immigrants, victims of discrimination, and persons seeking civil justice. Find out how to listen to Justice Watch with attorney Zulu Ali at justicewatchradio.com.
You're on board KCAA's Inland Talk Express. KCAA, Loma Linda, 1050 AM, the station that leaves no listener behind.
The following program on KCAA is pre-recorded.
It's Guy's Guy Radio. Here's your host, Robert Manny.
Welcome to Guys Guys Radio.